The DX Audio Service for August 1994.
Side 2. Somebody's obviously drinking again. That's kind of bizarre. Let's jump right back into our musings from members. The thoughts from the DX Audio Service members.
This is Tim Hendel from Miami. While visiting my family in Western New York on July 17th, I recorded a very interesting ID. This is 95.5 FM. I'm sure it's a Canadian station since they don't do a legal ID, and I don't know whether they came up with this slogan before or after the Simpson business, but it's an interesting slogan.
The switch is on. More people just like you are discovering OJ 95.5 FM. It's a refreshing new mix of music. All the variety of your own music collection. It's all right here. OJ 95.5 FM.
Playing a better variety of your market scopes, this is the DX Audio Service.
IDXers, Bill Wayne here from MarketScope, the segment on this tiny little cassette where we tune into radio markets near and far. A few days ago, I was standing vigil at my mailbox, just waiting for all those tapes to come pouring in, and lo and behold, one poured in. Bruce Reynolds from San Jose, California, recently traveled to Guam. Bruce was kind enough to think of me and all of us MarketScope fans. I thought, as I slid the cassette into my player, that all the stations were going to sound like National Public Radio. Boy, was I wrong.
For news and information from around the world, tune into News Talk 57 at the top of each hour for the CBS News. The CBS News is brought to you in part by First Savings and Loan in Agaña, Tamuni, and Dedido. Northwest Airlines, some people just know how to fly. Calvo's Insurance, the most trusted name in insurance, and Standard Office Supplies. CBS News, live from New York, 7 days a week on News Talk 57. This afternoon's weather forecast, partly cloudy with isolated light showers, winds northeasterly 10 to 15 miles per hour, gusting to 20 miles per hour, high temperature in the low 90s. Tonight's forecast, partly cloudy, winds light and variable, low temperature in the 70s. You're listening to News Talk 57, KGUM, Agaña, Guam. It's 3 o'clock, time for the CBS News, followed by Money Talk with Bob Brinker.
CBS News, this is Chris Stanley. Haiti is now off limits to almost all commercial airline flights.
No woman, no cry. Whoa. No woman, no cry. No woman, no cry. No woman, no cry. Oh, yeah. No woman, no cry.
That was Brother Walter with No Woman, No Cry. And before that, it was Frescon Manglo by KG and I Swear by Michael Montgomery. And coming up, I have a special request, and the time is 8:34. This is KUAM AM, or as we say in Guam, Eekungugi KUAM AM, Isla 61, Hizuhagatnya Guam, Zeni Ora, Esti 34 minutos, Pasao Alas 8.
And that wraps up the music for the 1994 March for Jesus. It's now 13 minutes before 4 o'clock. You're listening to AM 800 KTWG Agaña. We resume our regularly scheduled programming. Coming up at 4 o'clock, it's the last hour of the CCM countdown. Right now we'll have music to take us up to the top of the hour.
Taking a look at our island weather forecast for tonight and tomorrow. Tonight we can expect partly cloudy skies with winds light and variable, low temperature in the mid-70s. Tomorrow mostly sunny with isolated light afternoon showers, winds easterly 10 to 15 miles per hour, gusting to 20 miles per hour near showers, high temperature in the lower 90s. Seas and surf forecast for tonight and tomorrow, seas light to moderate at 2 to 4 feet, surf conditions 3 to 5 feet on northeastern clockwise through southeastern exposures, and 1 to 3 feet elsewhere. The sun will set at 6:50 this evening and will rise at 5:49 early Sunday morning. Currently it is 88 degrees under partly cloudy skies here at KSAI in Susupi. At 9 minutes past the hour, that's the latest news, sports, business, sports, and weather brought to you this afternoon by KSAI Radio. Stay tuned. I'll be back with the classified ads and community bulletin board after these messages.
Here just for you, AM 1053, KCNA.
Stay tuned, folks. AP is coming up in about a short time, so stay tuned.
AM 1053, KCNM.
News. I'm Adrienne Mattil. President Clinton says momentum is building toward a solution and cautions against measures that would not ensure coverage for all Americans. Adrienne Mattil, AP Network News.
And this is Kim O'Hagan right here on AM 1053. Your AP Network News at this time is being brought to you by Marpag right up in Kuala Rai.
Coconut Country is AM 1053, KCNM.
KPRG is licensed to the Guam Educational Radio Foundation. Your questions and comments are welcome at KPRG. Our telephone number is 734-8930. Our address is KPRG, Building 13, Dean's Circle, UOG Station, Manilao, Guam, 96923. Our studios are located on Dean's Circle at the University of Guam campus. And a good morning to you.
This is NPR, National Public Radio.
Listening to Public Radio for Guam, KPRG 89.3 Agania, with studios located on the campus of the University of Guam.
Let's try to get there alive this afternoon. You're listening to Light 91 FM, KOLG 90.9 FM Agania.
Hello, Americans. I'm Paul Harvey.
America's most listened to radio reporter, America's most widely respected commentator, Paul Harvey is back on the Guam airwaves here on Light 91 FM.
You know what the news is. You're going to hear the rest of the story.
Paul Harvey news and commentary every day except Sunday at 7:05 in the morning. Also, the rest of the story weekdays at 12:05 and 5:05.
Paul Harvey's rest of the story is a service of ABC News.
Paul Harvey is back right here on Light 91 FM.
CNN News Center in Atlanta. I'm Jenny West. Republican presidential candidate and former housing secretary Jack Kemp favors the death penalty but has difficulty imagining it as the outcome for longtime friend O.J. Simpson. This is CNN Radio News.
You're listening to Joy 92, KSDA-FM, Agania Heights, and Agate, the broadcast service of the Guam Seventh-day Adventist Churches. We invite you to stay with us for Lutheran Vespers and Palawan Voice of Prophecy coming up next.
Right here on 94 FM. Right here on 94 FM. Right here on 94 FM.
Did you get all that?
Yeah, I got it. Good. 94 FM. Classic 94.
Skies by the Vix on Classic 94. Don't go away, guys, because coming up we have Bachman Turner Overdrive, Steve Miller Band, and Eric Clapton. Listening to Stephanie on Classic 94, we are now 4:33 in the afternoon, and here's some CCR with Green River on Classic 94 FM. Jet on Classic 94. It's 1 minute past five. You're listening to KUAM Agania Guam. And coming up next, we have Rob Salazar to keep you company through the next few hours. I'm Stephanie. Thanks, you guys, for keeping me company.
Hi, good afternoon. It's 4:05. I'm Marilyn Lonnie with another hour of your favorite soft hits, including Belinda Carlisle, Janet Jackson, Exposé, and Patti Smyth. They're up next on 95.5 K-Stereo.
Power 98 is Mobile the Logo, and don't forget who's coming in at 5 o'clock this afternoon. Of course, it's Joel Denver with Future Hits, so hang on, all right? Now it's Madonna on the Power.
Power 99, Saipan.
And Power 98, Guam.
Come together to flex.
Music power.
By presenting to you
the Power
Hip.
Hip
Pocket Music Chart.
And hey, dude, get this.
It's free.
You'll receive a complete list of new music you hear on the Power Station.
The Nasty Man's Reggae Pick, Quiet Storm Favorite,
and anything else we can cram on it.
The Power
Hip
Pocket Music Chart.
Compiled by Test Records.
And on the back, get this.
These special cool coupons for stuff you really want.
The Power
Hip
Pocket Music Chart.
So much more than just a piece of paper with songs on it.
It's an artistic expression.
Expression of your music knowledge.
That you can put in your hip pocket next to your butt.
Hey, what did you expect?
From the radio stations that like to hold hands and jam.
Power 99, Saipan.
And
Power
98, Guam.
Hi, I'm Gary Spears, and be sure to join me this week here on the Retro Show. My special guest will include the Brothers Johnson, the Brothers Isley, or would that be the Isley Brothers? It's that dyslexic thing I have going on. Teddy Pendergrass and Evelyn Champagne King, too. So join us as we take you back to the music and music makers from some of the best times of your life right here on the Retro Show.
Sunday morning brought to you by BCC Home and Garden, Marine Drive, and in the Harmon Loop with everything under the sun for your home. The Retro Show right here on Power 98.
The leader
serving planet Guam.
KZGZ Aganya.
Power 98.
97.5.
The number one music station.
Number one.
Power 98. Guam.
Hello, and thanks for locking your radio on to Future Hits. I'm Joel Denver, keeping you on top with the hits of tomorrow. Today, flying at you on the Big Bird.
Dominating the airwaves. Hit Radio 100.
Meet Me Halfway from the movie Over the Top on Hit Radio 100. Coming up next is the Flintstones. But Hit Radio 100 is KOKU Aganya.
Well, thank you, Bruce. That was kind of neat. Well, friends and neighbors, we'll see you back here next month as we continue on with Islands Radio on Market Scope. For the DX Audio Service, this is Phil Wayne. And now, here's that traveling guy, John Bowker.
Historical Moments in Radio, a collection of stories from the rich and exciting past on the AM radio dial. Hello again, I'm John Bowker. And this month, I want to share with you a mystery that confounded radio engineers and congressional leaders for many years. It came to a head, though, in 1926, when there was an outcry that an immediate investigation should be undertaken by the government to determine the cause of poor radio reception throughout the country. Many listeners were racking their brains to find some scientific theory to explain the poor receiving conditions. And what follows is a collection of several news and editorial items I've collected in our Sun City Center Historical Moments Library. Now, it was documented that during the winter months of 1925 and 26, radio reception had been remarkably poor. It might actually have been going on longer, but no one could be sure. They did know that the reception of local stations, of course, was not affected by weather except for lightning storms. And while there was no proof, though, it was apparent that radio listeners in the Middle Atlantic states were suffering the most, particularly noting the rise of complaints from the city of Washington, where listeners had been in the habit of tuning in New York and some southern stations regularly. And they concluded that atmospheric disturbances would play a role in such good or bad reception. Now, in fact, there have been some abnormally large disturbances on the sun lately, they said in 1926, and it's believed by some that such disturbances and sunspots are accompanied by the violent expulsion of tremendous clouds of electrons, which travel across the void of space, little impeded in their journey. And once they reach the Earth's upper atmosphere, they create the abnormal effects of radio reception, good and bad. Well, since we believe that fading and skip-distance reception is due to the electron-charged atmosphere about 100 miles or more above our heads, the correlation of the sun's activities with abnormal radio reception does seem to fit nicely. Now, the Milwaukee Journal went on to say this. The heads of the Bureau of Standards and the Radio Commission's chief inspector have both been asked to conduct an examination of this phenomena, but we realize that both men are very busy and that new radio regulations and needs for standards should certainly preempt any of this. It is really not remarkable that radio waves show some sympathetic reaction to the sun, and we can't really be sure that we're right after all. But it seems that any study should be handled by technical personnel, perhaps at a learned university, rather than by a study that might suggest new legislation aimed at changing the sun's characteristics. Oh, boy, what are you going to do? Well, I tell you what, let's change the subject. My eye was caught this month by an article released in a radio services bulletin of the Department of Commerce giving some interesting statistics as of March 1, 1926. It says, with 536 stations actually on the air now, there are 428 more applications for people anxious to serve the listening public. Now, for some time now, we're glad to say, this is 1926 now, remember, no new licenses have been issued by the Department of Commerce, so that the congestion, which a year ago was increasing by leaps and bounds, has become constant. At the last radio conference, the conferees apparently convinced the Secretary of Commerce that the public wanted him to stop issuing licenses, and indeed, Mr. Herbert Hoover has heeded the call. But each day brings more appeals for permission to broadcast, and we must recognize that many of these aspirants have every bit as much to offer the listening public as many of those now on the air. But there is no provision for insisting that an existing station that's providing a satisfactory public service should be forced to share its audience, either by time-sharing or loss of area due to interference created by a new station. A count of the request shows that at present, two applicants are asking approval to transmit with 5,000 watts, another at 3,000 watts, 18 more want to use 1,000 watts of power in their operations. The vast coverage range of such stations would quickly provide service to rural areas that hunger for the quality reception enjoyed in our larger cities, if they didn't cause a lot of interference to boot. Requests, though, for new stations from Chicago head the list. There are presently requests for 19 new broadcast operations in that city alone. Well, the broadcast band should be increased, they said in 1926, but there's still no clear way to satisfy all the requests for broadcast licenses now before the government. If all the requested and granted licenses were on the air, the total would be nearly 1,000 stations. Now, remember, that compares with 4,500 that we have on the air right now, 1994. Noting these comments, the press editorialized that the smartest thing for an aspiring broadcaster to do would be to provide programs to an existing station several hours a week. This would satisfy his craving to be heard and probably save himself a lot of money. Oh, dear. For Historical Moments in Radio, I'm John Bowker.
Let's take a look at the front page of DX News Magazine at this time and tell you that a press release from Tab Books, Anita McCormick's new Shortwave Listeners Q&A book, contains a section on AM DXing plus excellent basic information on shortwave listening. Just the thing for the beginner. The book sells for $12.95. Look for it in the bookstores or order direct by calling 1-800-822-8158. RadioCom 94, a la Radio Festival 1994, which had been organized by SCADS, is no more, according to Eric Cooper. But instead, you still have your choice of the International Radio Club of America Convention, which is going to be held August 26th through the 28th in Aberdeen, Washington. Contact Bill Hardy, H-A-R-D-Y, at 2301 Pacific Drive in Aberdeen, Washington, 98520. Or the National Radio Club Convention, which is going to be held September 2nd through the 5th over Labor Day weekend in Nashua, Manchester, New Hampshire. The convention is going to be held at the Ramada Hotel at Merrimack. The hotel is located on exit 11 of the F.E. Everett Turnpike, just north of downtown Nashua. A block of 50 rooms are set aside at a special rate of $45 single and double, and $55 triple and quad, not including the 8% tax. Rates and rooms are guaranteed, available until August the 26th. The hotel is now accepting reservations at 1-800-922-3477 or area code 603-424-6181. Be sure to mention the National Radio Club Convention for special rates. Now, as far as the registration fee, the convention registration is $40 per person or $16 for children under 12, which includes the banquet, and it must be payable in advance. Checks should be made payable to the National Radio Club and should be sent to the National Radio Club Convention, care of Bruce Conti, C-O-N-T-I, 46 Ridgefield, R-I-D-G-E-F-I-E-L-D Drive, Nashua, N-A-S-H-U-A, New Hampshire, 03062-1174. Before August the 26th, please register before August the 26th to ensure seating for the banquet. Specify whether you prefer chicken or beef. And for more information, send a self-addressed stamped envelope with your specific inquiries to the same address we just gave. And Bruce says he hopes to see you at the 1994 National Radio Club Convention in New Hampshire. A number of National Radio Club members said in answers to the new member Jerry Slay's question as to where WELO calls were located in 1947, and the consensus was that WELO 1490 was located in Tupelo, Mississippi, thanks to Kurt Enberg, Joe Kurth, Carrie Simpson, and I believe Doug Beard. From our DX time machine from 25 years ago, from the July 5th, 1969 DX News, Ralph Johnson of Buffalo, New York, noted that Ken Lyon of Akron, Ohio, got married. Wayne Heinen was in the United States Coast Guard and up in Alaska for a year. Jeff Fox sent him a copy of the WRYT 950 variant of the test that he heard. And he also welcomed new member Fred Osterman from Williamsville, New York. Recognize the name Fred Osterman? He's now down at Universal Amateur Radio down in Reynoldsburg, Ohio. And we just got word from the Publication Center that Ken has upped the ante on gift subscriptions for those of you that like to give a gift of the DX Audio Service for a holiday or perhaps just for a birthday or something. It used to be that you could get a gift subscription for someone and get a free month of the DX Audio Service added to your subscription. That's now up to two. Count them, 2 months. So if you'd like to give a gift of the DX Audio Service to someone this holiday season or just for their birthday, just remember that if you sign up someone to the DX Audio Service and give them a gift of the DX Audio Service, you get 2 months added to your DX Audio Service. And that's our notes on this edition of the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service. If you have something to say, something to tell us, perhaps a DX change or two, send them to us here at the DX Audio Service, Post Office Box 5031, Lima, Ohio 45802.
Send for yours today.
Sounds like the Phil Wayne Memorial Singers there. Interesting article appeared in Broadcasting Engineering Magazine from June of 1994 entitled FCC Update, Better Safe Than Sorry, written by Harry C. Martin and Andrew S. Kirsting. It reads, broadcasters should periodically conduct a self-inspection of all facilities, including their transmission site and tower, to ensure compliance with acceptable FCC rules and regulations. The first step in reviewing a station's technical operations is to check the areas where FCC inspectors most often issue violations. Now, in this article also appears a sample FCC inspection checklist. And this is kind of interesting. See where some of these might fall on some of your local stations. The first item is all towers are correctly painted. According to FCC Rule 17.50, it must be painted correctly to comply with both FCC and FAA guidelines. Second thing that they always check is the AM towers are properly fenced. Now, what this means is that the fencing around the AM tower is of the type where people can't get in and accidentally touch the tower while the station is operating, which, by the way, will give you a very severe burn. Then we have all current station authorizations, including auxiliary stations, are posted. Now, auxiliary stations mean the MARTI units, two-way radio, and the STL, studio transmitter link licenses, must be posted. That, by the way, is 73.1230 subparagraph A. Also, the chief operator is designated in writing and is posted. Also, contract chief operator agreements are on file. Those are 73.1230 paragraphs A and B. The chief operator and all duty operators' licenses are posted. Although the Federal Communications Commission does not require certain licenses as they did in the past, you must have a duty operator license posted for all operators of the transmitter. AM monitor point descriptions are correct. This means that all the different points where the station measures their signal must be correct and up to date. Chief operator is making weekly station log reviews. The chief operator of the station must still review the station's logs. Station logs for the past 2 years are available and complete. This means that they're not hidden someplace or locked up in the general manager's office. They must be available and complete. And by the way, the public does have the right to review certain documents that apply to the radio station. All station logs indicate a weekly EBS test was sent and received correctly. Now, I should make note that if, for example, a station does not receive a test from their CPSC1, they must note that on the log and detail exactly what they did to correct the situation. Remote control and metering operational and calibrated. This means that the readings that the station gets from their remote control unit must be calibrated according to 73.1410. Most recent equipment performance measurements are available and complete. Although the Federal Communications Commission does not necessarily require proof of performances to be on file all the time, you must have some sort of document indicating that the station does comply with the technical standards of 73.1590. The transmitted signal meets FCC specifications and is in accordance with station license. Now, this is divided down into two different areas. That's operating power within the limits. And by the way, a station must still operate within the following parameters. 90% is the lowest power that the station can run, and 105% is the highest. Now, what that means is that if you're operating at 100% power, which is 1,000 watts, you can go down 10% or up 5%, but that is the limit. Modulation must be within the limits of 100%, and that's defined at 73.1570. Operators must be properly trained. Now, this is kind of an interesting rule. 73.1860. All the operators must know what to do to operate the transmitter correctly. EBS receiver working and tuned to the proper station. Now, this is one that a lot of stations get zinged on, 73.932. And what happens most of the time is the receiver neither does not pick up the weekly test or does not pick up a warning, or it's tuned to some other station. It must be working and tuned to the proper station. EBS test transmissions must be sent okay. Now, this means that not only must the level of modulation, the two-tone actuator signal that you hear, be at the correct level, but it must be at the correct frequencies. Both tones must be present. Each tone modulates a transmitter at least 40%, and the tone duration should be 20 to 25 seconds in length. The EBS encoder is the FCC type accepted, i.e. no tones on cart, please, guys. And the EBS checklist with authenticator envelope must be at the duty operator position at all times. Now, it's kind of interesting. I'd like to make note that some of these stations which operate unattended overnight, you have to wonder how they can comply with some of those EBS guidelines. Suppose something comes in on the EBS. How do they turn that information around? Kind of interesting, huh? Well, we'll see what the FCC does with this in fiscal 95. It's time now to take a look at Pete Kemp's Radio Roundup, a little in-depth news and information from around the radio circles here on the DX Audio Service. Well, Pete writes to us that H. Ross Perot will enter the talk show arena on October the 1st when his syndicated show hits the air. It will be distributed by the Tribune Radio Networks. President Clinton has nominated Rachel Chong and Susan Ness to fill seats at the Federal Communications Commission. Comedian David Brenner has replaced Larry King in the Westwood One afternoon seat from 3 till 6 o'clock Eastern Time. Moby has been selected Country Radio Air Personality of the Year by Billboard Magazine. His show is now being syndicated via ABC Radio Networks. KMEN Riverside, California, switching to a killer oldies format, is simulcasting sister station KGGI and Hollywood Hamilton in the mornings. They will continue to carry their sports schedule of the Angels, Clippers, Lakers, and Raiders. Randy Marsh is now doing the morning wake-up slot on WKIS, and talk about a comeback, Chicago Eddie Schwartz is back behind the microphone at Chicago's WLUP radio following a very lengthy illness. From Austin, Texas, morning veteran Sammy Allred and Bob Cole have been named the favorite air personalities in the market according to the Austin Chronicle's Reader's Poll. Charles Osgood and Don Pardo will host the Radio Hall of Fame inductee ceremonies in November. That's a nice pair of guys to be putting on the radio. That, of course, we hear them a lot on the radio. And after 10 years on KGO, Lee Rogers is moving on to KIRO in Seattle to talk some things up. Peter King has joined WWNZ in Orlando for the afternoon news slot. WISN's Midday Milwaukee will now have Kurt Smith at the helm. Kurt is a former presidential speechwriter. Interesting story comes out of Billings, Montana, where radio personalities Scott Innes and Big D recently spent 48 hours suspended in a RV from a 60-ton crane. The money raised benefited a local girl who was injured by falling off a cliff. Sharp-eyed NRC-er Greg Henson advises that in the D.C. area, Infinity Broadcasting has purchased WPGC AM and FM. Also in D.C., WXTR-FM has created the Big Daddies of Washington Radio and has brought back a number of the names to the airwaves. Jack Alex, J.A. the DJ, Barry the Boss with the Hot Sauce Richards, Harv Moore the Boy Next Door, and later to become the Morning Mayor, Carol James, Ed Walker, and Sonny Jim Henson. They'll even include air checks from WRC's Great 98 Days with James Mitchell Wilson, Simon Train, Brother Love, and Johnny Andrews. The rumor mill has radio's conservative black talk show host Armstrong Williams possibly doing a TV show on the new cable network America's Talking. Popular C&W DJ Sandy Weaver is leaving the morning slot on WMZQ. She's leaving to be with her husband, who recently has been transferred to Atlanta with IBM. Look for her to pop up on one of the stations there, as she's very talented. Pete Kemp also writes that he says, in Connecticut, we have many IBM employees in the area. IBM in Connecticut means I've been moved. The American Top 40 syndicated countdown show has been axed. ABC has signed Rick Dees for Rick Dees' weekly Top 40, and that show will be syndicated overseas only. The company did recognize Casey Kasem for his pioneering work with the series from 1970 to 1988, with Shadow Stevens following him for a brief stint. Rick gets a multi-year, multi-million dollar package. Cap City's ABC, by the way, has purchased KSFO. The FCC is now allocating broadcasters to pay fees using credit cards, banking wires, and electronic deposits. Boy, things changed. Times are changing at WTIC-FM. They've adopted a no-rap policy. Russell and Flim have moved across town to WEZC in Charlotte, North Carolina. Associated Press's All News Radio has signed up WHNZ, WINZ, WWNZ, and WZNA to their affiliates list. International broadcast band DXers should note that Emma's Broadcasting has received a national license in the United Kingdom for Talk Radio UK. Rush Limbaugh recently went live from KMOX. While in the city, he managed to bag some additional airtime with legendary sportscaster Jack Buck doing color. Bruce Williams will receive the 1994 Talk Show Host of the Year Award at the upcoming NARTSH convention. Well, they're changing around a little bit more. WGAY in our nation's capital has added the team of David Byrd and Beverly Fox for the wake-up chores. Kathy Hart has left Phoenix for co-hosting chores on WNCI in Columbus, replacing Sean Ireland. Also, the rumor mill has Group W changing its recently acquired KKHI AM format from classical to news talk. The call letters will also be changed from KKHI to KPIX. Former WKBW morning band Dan Kelly is now doing wake-ups on WBUF using the slogan B93. Jim Hunter has moved into the morning slot on WGRL in the racing city of Indianapolis. Also on the wake-up scene, Dallas's Chuck Boozer is now back in Charlotte on WTDR. KMPC recently auditioned 363 amateur announcers for possible employment. How come we didn't know about this? The WLIB-WOWO battle on 1190 looks like it might take a strange twist. Inner City Communications, owner of WLIB, has purchased WOWO in Fort Wayne. The rumor mill speculates that if WOWO changes its antenna pattern and or power, that WLIB will be able to increase or stay on at night. Tom Likas is back in L.A., this time on KMPC. National Radio Club member Greg Henson also reports that WTOP has appeared to have averted a strike with its on-air employees. Staffers representing AFTRA have agreed to a new 3-year deal. While WJR states that it is the first station in the market to have an airplane, the facts appear to prove otherwise. Crosstown rival WWJ, when owned by the Detroit News, had a Lockheed Orion. WTEM is sporting a new antenna system in Germantown, their old 51-acre site on Bells Hills Road in Potomac, will become a 200-home subdivision. How soon have we heard about that? And from whatever happened department, CNN's Van Wright has landed on WDIV television in Detroit, Michigan. His vocalizations certainly have been emulated by many other sportscasters across the United States and the country. I also should say that he's also doing some stints with the Tigers television network. Illinois Lieutenant Governor Bob Kusta has decided to drop out of politics for an afternoon talk gig on powerful WLS. And if you'd like to contribute to this column by sending in some gossip, it's very easy to do. Just send it to Pete Kemp, K-E-M-P, and you can reach him on several different addresses if you have a computer system. He's on CompuServe at 72376,2557. Also on Prodigy at PFVK52D. Also on Internet with the user address of PETEKZ1Z at AOL.com, and he's also frequent in the FIDO system and the shortwave, ham, or broadcasting echoes. And that's so much for now for Pete Kemp's Radio Roundup.
Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday too. We're with you. Morning, noon, and night time too. Right around the clock with you. W-L-S, Chicago.
Okay, we've got an interesting article here, which it kind of makes me wonder about some of the people that subscribe to the audio service, some of our members that work in broadcasting. I wonder if we'll ever catch some of these folks doing these things. Stupid DJ tricks, as written in the Toledo Blade, disc jockeys at a Florida radio stations spent a month of March parading around town in their underwear. Tampa's WFLZ challenges listeners to catch the DJs with their pants on and win the cash in their pockets. In Boston, the jocks at WROR herded a tribe of goats to a listener's home on Earth Day to demonstrate the environmentalist way to mow the lawn. Houston's KLOL gave away breast augmentation when it introduced its new morning team, the Boobs. Okay. Now, in Toledo, WRQN's Steve Mason recently spent 48 hours in a small opening inside a 5,000-pound block of ice. Now, this stunt came after he spent a week atop a billboard to raise money for a local charity. Now, last year, the local DJ was buried alive, dunked in nacho cheese, and dipped in chocolate for various charity and station promotions. Diane Schreiber, another member of 93Q's Morning Zoo, has also been covered with brown confection, as well as with mud during a wrestling match with the winner of the 1990 Tough Woman contest in Toledo. Radio has great heritage in wild and crazy stunts. Three of the bits I did were done in the 50s by early DJs, Mason says. Radio is show business. And it is a competitive business, some insiders say. There was a time when whoever had the best signal would win. Then people reached a parity there. Then it's now the best research or staff. Now we've reached a point where whoever does the best marketing and promotion stands out, says Lou Borton, a radio representative on the Board of Broadcast Promotions and Marketing Executives. Now I only have to wonder how many of our broadcasters here on the DX Audio Service have tried some silly stunts. Well, I can say that for the American Cancer Society, I've done jail and bail, so I guess I paid my dues there. Interesting article appeared in Radio World magazine from June 15th of 1994, and one of the things that I've always told many stations is if you want to have a good share of your listening audience, you got to do the things, as we mentioned on side one of this cassette, like your news and sports and weather for your local communities. However, according to a recent publication, the April edition of the Radio Television News Directors Association Communicator, an estimated 230 radio newsrooms closed in 1993. Now, this is according to the survey, which was compiled from a sample of 830 of an estimated 6,640 commercial radio stations with working addresses. According to the communicator, apparently joint AM-FM news departments were only counted once. Returns were received from 307, or 37% of the sample, and of the radio stations responding, 254, or 83%, said that they had news departments. News directors were asked to count sports, weather, and technical specialties as part of the staffs, if they were essential to the part of the news department. The survey found that radio news departments caught in a downward spiral. No news programming was created locally by one of every six, or 16.9% of the stations surveyed, leaving approximately 5,520 radio newsrooms still active. This was an increase from the 1992 survey results, which found one in seven, or 13.4%, originating no news programming locally. An estimated 1,100 plus radio news operations have closed since 1991's deregulation freed stations from carrying non-entertainment programming, according to the communicator. And I hope that we're containing some entertaining programming. And, of course, we'd like to hear from you, the DX Audio Service listener, just by sending us a card or a letter. You can either send it to me here at the DX Audio Service. The address, of course, is on this tape. Or send it up to the Publication Center to the attention of Ken Chatterton, C-H-A-T-T-E-R-T-O-N. As we get close to convention time, we're going to kind of analyze what we've been doing here at the DX Audio Service, and if there's some things we should be doing that we're not doing, we'd like to know about that so we can include it in the magazine, as well as things that maybe you don't like, columns that you'd like to see dropped or something that's just not that interesting. See, we also have After Dark Number 4, which is out for those of you that like that particular series. After Dark Number 4 is four C90 cassettes sent to you postpaid for $9.50 from the Publications Center up there in Mansfield. And we're working on After Dark Number 5 at the present time and had an interesting suggestion from one of our listeners and readers of the magazine. He said that why don't you do something like Bruce Williams does, where you have a certain date where you record off the air. And you know how we did the thing with the questions that people asked me and some of the other editors? Well, let's find out if someone would find that of any interest. If you think that you might avail yourself of that, and give us a call and do a partial talk with us here on the DX Audio Service, just drop me some cards and letters and let me know if this is going to be something that you'd be interested in. Maybe we'll incorporate that into After Dark number 5. That's it for this edition of the National Radio Club's DX Audio Service. We'll see you in 30 days. This is Fred Vobey saying 73, good DX, and get out there and support radio.